Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Continuing to work through the listener Q&A episodes, today's questions come from Troy. And I'm going to go through two in this episode. They are, what are the yields from permaculture which can translate into monetary savings or gains? And, how do you begin to sell the idea to someone who could benefit from permaculture principles in their life? As for the first question, as you mentioned in your intro to this, Troy, which I'm sharing here for the benefit of the other listeners, there's the money that can be raised from practicing permaculture by consulting, designing, or building in your surrounding area. There's also the money that can be raised from sharing this work via the web, like I'm doing here. And then you can also reduce your expenses and your need for money via things like CSAs, food co-ops, growing your own food, bartering, and so on. But I also look at the income potential that comes from teaching. Not just permaculture specifically, like PDCs and intro courses, but everything that people are interested in with the green and sustainability movements that are currently rather prevalent. When my wife's out at lectures and seminars and talking with people about permaculture, she explains it to them as a way of applying sustainability, because it takes all the questions at hand about land use, technology, alternative energy, gardening, and puts it all together in one design package that can handle pretty much all of it. And if you go back and listen to the episode a few back about finding a permaculture design course, particularly the list of things that I say you should see included in a class, listen to that again and that long list of things that I present. Everything on that list is something that you can convert into a class, a lecture, or seminar based on your interests. Really, anything in there is something that you can learn about, find some information on, and package into something that you can be out there sharing with others and earn an income from. But the best way, I think, to start is to take one idea and run with it. Say you like the idea of aquaculture. Well, go out and look for plans to do maybe a fish tank aquaculture and aquaponics setup. Build it. Play with it. Document it. Post the pictures and other information on the web. Make videos. And then you can, you know, sell those videos along with a parts list and detailed instructions of how you did it, where you got the parts, and so on. Go talk about that experience and show off what you're doing. Lug it around. Maybe you talk to a biology teacher at a high school and you take your tank in and then build your professional resume around this idea because of these lectures. And then you can turn that into a workshop where you have everybody come in, and maybe in the class you actually build one of these setups with the people who are involved. And then at the end of that, you know, draw names from a hat so that someone can take it home with them. You can, you know, write a pamphlet about it and turn that into a product. Or if you get really good, maybe that's when you go out and you write a whole book about permaculture and aquaculture and show all the work that you've done. And that's kind of a litany of ideas with just that concept of aquaculture that you can turn into a way to provide an income as a result of your work with permaculture. And though I mentioned it as teaching, you could break it down in a number of ways that allow you to share it. As you apply your imagination and creativity to it, as Mollison reminds us, the yields are theoretically unlimited. Look for what you like in that specific set, make a go at it, share it with your audience, and weave permaculture into it. Mention at the outset, if you've taken a PDC, that you're a certified permaculture designer, and this is a project that you put together because of your training, and as you walk through it, bring up the principles and ethics in a way that's palatable to who you're working with and the subject at hand. And I'll touch on that idea of palatability when it comes to selling permaculture with the second question. And something else that I've been considering here for a while is, which is something that you might try doing once you've gone through a PDC, is to create a permaculture for business program. And I ran across an article about this once, and I wish I still had the link for it when I was thinking about this idea to see if anybody else had done it. But it's where you act as a business consultant and teach an organization the ethics and principles of permaculture and how they can be applied to the company and the benefits that can come from using it. Now, I know that getting your foot in the door can be kind of hard if you don't have any clients or any examples to point to about how exactly this works, but I found that if you offer a free seminar to somebody, they're likely to take it. And by the act of giving that seminar, it's something that you can put in your resume and point to that, hey, well, I've gone and I talked with this group or that group or this company, and this is how long I went and talked to them. This is who was in attendance. This was how many people in total were there, what we talked about, and that then can get you in and be able to give it a try somewhere else. From that idea of saving money that's also a part of this question, I find that implementing the ethics of people care and fair share provide a wealth of opportunities to network and work with other people, which you can then use if you need to because you're in touch with this community and you know what's going on, to barter and trade for services so that everyone involved can benefit without necessarily needing cash. And I went to a great presentation by the author Charles Eisenstein, and he introduced the idea of a gift circle as an alternative cashless economy and community building exercise where you get a bunch of people together and one person explains the idea of this gift circle and how it's going to work. Because you go around the circle three times. The first time that you do it when you're sitting down is everyone goes through and says who they are and what they need help from, what kind of a gift they need from the group. And then as they say this, anyone else in the group who can help them in some way offers that gift to them. And it helps usually if the person organizing this gift circle is writing everything down and you collect everyone's contact information so they can get together afterwards. But everybody goes around the circle once saying who they are and what gift they need. The other people respond offering gifts. Then once it goes all the way around the circle, it goes around again, this time with everyone presenting something that they can offer to someone else. A gift that they have to share with somebody. And then anyone in the group can take them up on that offer if they would like to. And then the last time you go around the group and you say what you're thankful for, whether that is one of the gifts that you were given in the group, part of the experience that was worthwhile to you, or if you've done a gift circle a couple of times, that you address the blessings that you've received from it, the gifts that you've received in the past that you're thankful for. I found that was a really interesting way to get people together, to make issues known to one another, because it can be something as easy as someone needs a bicycle, or as complicated as, needs help putting in a new floor in their kitchen. Anything that comes to the group that's asked for, it is a legitimate desire for a gift. Yes, I know sometimes those things can wind up frivolous, like if you've ever been on the website FreeCycle. I know people have posted on there that they needed a new plasma TV for Christmas and asking for all these extravagant luxuries, and those are the kinds of gifts that aren't likely to be fulfilled. But if there's a real need, you can probably find someone there to help you. I like that idea because it is completely cashless, and that's one of the things up front, is that it's not about money, and that's the one thing that is not an appropriate thing to ask for in this setting is money. It's about gifts and moving away from that cash-based economy to make something that's more local and communal among the members. I really like the gift circle. That's why I mention it here, because of that reduction in the need for cash. But more generally, though, I find that permaculture gives you a lens to look through for finding ways to reduce your need for inflows and outflows so you can build stock in yourself and the area around you. Exactly what that is, though, depends on your situation. The holistic approach that comes with permaculture, though, means that you're doing more than just one thing here or there, but looking at all the possibilities and stacking together the functions and yields, in the case of this question's profit and savings. And the actions that you take might not seem like much at first, but it adds up. And this is a bit of brainstorming that I did as I was walking through this idea. And I know that some of it sounds pretty mainstream, like you'd hear on the news or read in a magazine about this kind of stuff, but there's a little bit of my permaculture reasoning as I go along. I start with composting and recycling. I don't know that there are two topics that come up more, other than maybe reducing our energy needs, than these two. And I like them because as you start to do them, they produce less waste, which goes towards that principle of no waste. And though it's not perfect, it's a start. And we can also value our renewable resource, that is our compost, and the nutrient cycle going on site, which further allows us to increase the connections between the various elements. And if you want to be really analytical about it, you can build your compost in such a way that it's tailored to the specific needs of the plants on your site. But from there, you can use that compost directly in your garden, so you don't need to buy any, which saves money. And because it acts as a fertilizer, there's another product you don't need to bring in, and can reduce fuel expenditures either directly because you're not driving to the store, or indirectly because it's not being shipped to you. And I could also take that product, that compost, and trade it to a neighbor who's building a garden, or donate it to a local project to help build social ties and goodwill, and applying those ethics of people care and fair shares. Or it could be sold as a product to raise money. The same with vermicomposting. If you're using worms and are successful with it, you could have a small business selling some worms a couple times a year. When it comes to recycling, at least around here, one thing that I really like about it is that there's no fee for having your recycling picked up. We get charged for trash, but not for recycling. And the company we have offers a couple of different options for services, including several that are less expensive than what my family's currently paying. By reducing the amount of outgoing waste, we can reduce that bill, freeing up more money. And as we practice this more and more, It becomes one where we reduce the waste coming into our lives, even further reducing that which goes out. On a similar vein, it's also why I've taken to learning how to repair things. Not only does it greatly reduce waste, but it allows me to use the principle of observe and interact to figure out the issue, and then creatively use and respond to change to figure out a repair, because I don't have the skills to return something to its original condition, unless maybe it's a computer or something like that. But, you know, chairs and furniture and things, I don't. But I can make it functional enough to keep using, long past the point where, in my previous life, before becoming a permaculture practitioner, I would have given it to someone else to deal with or thrown it out and bought a new one. Furniture repair has been one of the big places where I've used this a lot. For anyone who has small children, or has had them in the last decade or so, you might know about these, but one of my favorite gifts that we received after my daughter was born, and it was used, given to us by one of our neighbors, was a gliding rocker. And the smooth bearings, and the way that that just kind of moves back and forth, was a godsend to comfort my children late at night when I was tired and just didn't have the wherewithal to walk around with them and rock them in my arms. We still use it pretty heavily even now, because my son likes to sit in it with either me or my wife when he's tired. But this glider's broken on several occasions because one of the bearings was pulled out of the wood, and, you know, go in and just set the screws back in, it's fixed. No big deal. But a few weeks ago, a spring came loose that made the chair kind of dangerous to the kids because of where it was. If they were to reach under the chair to grab a toy, they could cut themselves on it. And it had broken off in such a way that I couldn't fit it back to where it was originally mounted. So, looking at it, I was able to position it in a way that it was out of reach of little hands, but back in a place where we could still use it as a chair. And I did that without needing to do any kind of a heavy metal staple or anything else. I just went through my kitchen looking for something that would allow me to cover that sharp end and place it back into position so it could hold weight. And I wound up finding some string that I had, wrapped it around the end, put it all into position, tied it off to the frame pretty well, and I have a functional chair again. From beginning to end, once I realized it was broken to fix it, was about 5 minutes of my time. I've also been spending some time fixing kitchen chairs. And in that case, I didn't have the clamps necessary to hold the joints together while the glue set. So instead, I came up with a way to use some cord to rig a slip clamp that I could pull tight to hold the legs together and in position. And there was a bit of trial and error in the beginning, but overall, it took less time for me to find a solution to the problem than it would have taken for me to drive to the store to pick up clamps and anything else that I would have needed and get back and fix the chair than with my improvised methods. And it worked. Set it there, let it all dry for 24 hours, remove my cord, which I could still use for another project, and it was ready to go. And I didn't have to buy anything because I was able to build that solution creatively. But that reduction in use of resources and monetary outlays is why, if I do buy something, I shoot for used wherever possible, because the savings in a lot of cases are outstanding, and I'm not putting resources into the system to produce a new widget every time I need one, allowing more resources to be available for others. And that process is also teaching me the difference between something that's well-made, durable, and can be repaired versus what's disposable. And going out and looking at two bookshelves side by side that both look sturdy, but finding the little details that make one better than the other for my needs. And as I see those gains, the money saved, the durability so that I'm taking less time to repair, and then being aware of the products that I'm buying ahead of time so that if I do need to repair them, I can act on it quickly, is becoming this positive feedback loop that's reached a point where I don't need any more encouragement to keep doing this. As I walk through ideas like this, it's why I look back to what I said above about yields. As you think about it, look around and begin applying the principles to your life, the list of hows, whys, and whats grow quickly on ways that these things can save you money or make you money. And I hope that covers that question well enough as a place to start and begin exploring your own thoughts on it more deeply. I know that that only begins to touch the list, and with a couple of days of free time just to sit down and brainstorm with my pad and paper and be doing mind maps and everything else, just like the regular yields, this could be the basis for an entire podcast series, just a show by itself, applying permaculture to making and saving money. So if someone wants to start a permaculture show on that idea or do a permaculture in business, please use those ideas. Go out there, take the PDC, be sharing this with other folks. It's another way to get this information out there. So then, when it comes to Troy's second question, How do you begin to sell the idea to someone who could benefit from permaculture principles in their life? I wish I had a one-line answer for this, but I don't because everyone reacts to the message in a different way. And now, Troy had mentioned about needing to lead by example, and I agree with him that that's what we have to do. As I mentioned on Permaculture in the City, we just have to be out there doing this and showing people that it can be done. But when I'm talking with folks about it, I try to have a simple definition of what permaculture is available and an easy way to talk about what permaculture is trying to accomplish. Usually I tie those together in one sentence. All of that in a way that's palatable to folks. And then I'll follow that up by engaging their interests, not my own. I don't overwhelm them with everything that permaculture can be, that huge pattern of its potential, but focus on a few details that they might care about and be able to grasp and work with easily. My favorite quick definition for permaculture is that it's about building happy communities powered by the sun. I don't have my notes on hand, but I believe that comes from Peter Bain, if my memory's right. But then another one that I've really started to like is that permaculture is about intentionally designing our communities and landscapes. And just use either of those to lead into that other person, tailoring where that conversation goes to their viewpoint. And here's some examples of what I mean by that from my own experiences and how I handled it. I have some very dear friends and other folks who I spend a lot of time with who, if I begin talking about climate change or global warming, they're just going to shut down. And the conversation pretty much ends at that point, and it's not going to continue. So if I know that we're going to be talking about something like that, I leave those elements totally out of it, and instead focus on how using permaculture to design the world around us can bring about stability, build the local economy, lead to job creation, and then talk about how permaculture as a low energy system requires more people. But in that process, also point out that that means that the initial investment to start something like this can be really low because in many cases you don't need heavy equipment to go through with it. Or if you do, it's going to be a once and done kind of thing where you can hire somebody in to use their equipment and not need to be out there buying expensive tractors and combines and harvesters and everything else. But instead, can be on the ground running and just be hiring people to come in and work that system where they can make some money with that job. But also, because this doesn't require prime farmland and that the techniques and ideas of permaculture build soil and fertility and can be adapted to more or less any location, well, although I'm still kind of working on the Antarctic angle, they can begin implementing these ideas on a very small scale, be that at their home, at their office, or creating a business out of it and doing this sustainable growing. Or if I'm talking to farmers, I don't start off by talking about, you know, permaculture began as a response to the destruction of soil because of current agricultural practices, because their plowing and application of fertilizers, pesticides, and herbicides are destructive. But rather, I talk about how permaculture can be used to help them manage erosion or nitrate runoff into streams, which is a really big issue around here right now, because many of our waterways feed into the Chesapeake Bay, and there are some rules and regulations about reducing that, and if they don't, there are some heavy fines that could come with it. But I'll also bring up riparian repair to further reduce the damage to the streams so that they have water for their livestock, and talk about pumping water from the stream to the livestock so that they're not there doing the damage. Or I'll bring up the opportunities to develop a CSA or farmer's market so that they're selling their food to local people, using less resources to get it there and to get it distributed. And with that, you can look at how the ethics of earth care, people care, and fair shares are all satisfied with that work. If I'm talking to just one person and they're really interested in bringing some resiliency into their family to protect it from uncertainty, I focus on how they can have an abundance of food so that if they lose a job or have an issue in the family, they can still be able to eat and do it without a lot of time once the system's established, and also use that to build their ties in the community so that if something does happen, they have other people to rely on, and it's not a system where they have to pay somebody or go to the government for money to do it, that they rely on their local community. And then for some people, like my wife, who's an avid reader, I just give them a book and say, here, read this. If you want to understand what it is that I'm talking about and that I do, just check this book out. I do recommend having a couple of different choices available. I originally gave my wife Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability. She read it in 2 days and handed it back to me and said, yeah, and this is common sense. I didn't need to read a book about this, which, considering the impact that that book had on me, it was a little disconcerting to have her do that. But I understand it just didn't appeal to her the way that it did for me. And a few days back, I gave her Gaia's Garden by Toby Hemingway, and she's about 100 pages into that, and she's hooked. It's what she wants to do. It's motivating her. It got to her on the right level. So now she's talking about what we can do to kill our lawn and start planting a variety of ground covers to spread and take it over and putting in our trees and really having a nice integrated design here at the house. And once you've used these little ideas to engage someone, that's where I begin to bring up the rest of permaculture and start putting that in by talking about what you do to make these decisions, about what goes where and how to design and what practices to take. From everything that I've read, from all my experiences so far, my current line of thought is that by pushing the principles so that people can become deeply aware of them is the foundation that folks need to have well established with a thorough understanding. Because from that, those principles, and just reminded of the three ethics and the prime directive, with that you can design anything, but you need to know it in order to do that. Even with that said, there are also times when I teach permaculture to people without ever bringing up the word or talking about it explicitly, because in that moment, for those people, it isn't necessary to them or their needs, but it still allows me to get them thinking about it and applying these ideas. I really have a deep desire to get people to look at the world using permaculture, the ethics, the principles. And any way that I can get them to do that, whether directly or indirectly, means it's being implemented a little bit more. And that really puts a smile on my face at the end of the day, whether I'm saying that, hey, this is permaculture or not. Well, this episode's going on a little bit longer than I originally thought it would, so I'm going to go ahead and end it here. For Troy or anyone else out there, if this raises even more questions, or it doesn't answer the question well enough, please let me know. The address is show@thepermaculturepodcast, or you can call in and maybe talk to me, or at least leave a message at 1-717-798-8100. And that's for folks in the U.S. and Canada. If you're outside the country, you'll need to know your nation's exit code, and you can find those online. Or you can also drop by the website and leave a comment there or make a donation, thepermaculturepodcast.com. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.